Hey guys, this is Chirag and you're listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya FM. We'd like to wish you all a very happy new year, and we hope that 2019 sets ablaze many of those ideas that have been brewing over the last year and sets the stage for great success. And speaking of great success, our guests for today are the awesome women behind Frying Pan Adventures, Dubai's first food tour company. We sat down with them back in April when Tales of the Trade was just beginning to take shape. And the dynamic duo of sisters, Arwa and Farida Ahmed, gave us a deep insight into how they fought their way into carving a brand new facet of a tourism industry which at the time was dominated by desert safaris. 5 years in, their team is growing and they continue to rack up awards and TripAdvisor certificates of excellence. And they recently launched a program for residents that they had teased to us back then called Sufra. So, without further ado, let's get the show on the road.
January 2nd, actually, I remember I start getting an emails from London. Hey, we'd like to book a tour. Where do we book? I remember responding to one of the first of those emails saying, I haven't really launched, but how do you know about this business? The lady responded back saying, you've just been mentioned in the Telegraph. So Lara Dunstan had written this article on 36 hours to spend in Dubai, and she had inserted us at 12 p.m. And actually, that kept us busy for the first 3 months. It continued, and to date, I'll have people listing the Telegraph as their source of information.
Show the people behind Frying Pan Adventures, Dubai's first food tour company, talking about the days they started out 5 years ago, to the company whose tours continue to rank among the top things to do in Dubai, not to mention multiple TripAdvisor certificates of excellence. Hello to the women behind the company and now co-hosts of the Frying Pan Diaries, Dubai's first food podcast, Chief Executive Muncher of Frying Pan Adventures, Arwa Ahmed.
Hello, great to be here.
And hello to General Manager Farida Ahmed as well.
Hi.
So I'm going to jump right into the question that's on everybody's mind. Why does Arwa get a funky foodie title and Farida get a very traditional general manager?
That's just because I'm the more creative one and I come up with my own titles.
That's not true. We've actually had several arguments, several brainstorming sessions over this. And it turns out my name is needed more on the Frying Pan license than Arva's is. So I need a more formal title.
Exactly. And Dubai government doesn't take too well to titles like Chief Executive Muncher.
So let's go back to 2013. How does ilivinafryingpan.com, a niche food blog trying to capture the history and the culture about the food in Dubai, become Frying Pan Adventures, like the food tour company, right? What triggers that kind of a transition?
So this is what happened. I'd started a blog in 2010 when I moved back from the US. And it was at the time just a very open-ended, I'll write about everything I eat, wasn't very specific at all. But then I realized over time that as we started to get more and more invites for free food, and I think Chirag, you are very familiar with that and have consumed a lot of those invited events along with us.
There's a funny story there, right? So the reason I discovered your blog, thank you, this was in 2010, I got an email from a friend of mine sending me your blog's link and saying, wow, nice work on the blog. And I looked at that and I was like, what is this person talking about? Yes, I did launch a food blog, but that's not my link, right? And I went to the about section. And turns out there's a interestingly common history there, right? We both grew up in the UAE. We both went to Philadelphia. We were, in fact, living in the same city a few blocks away from each other for quite some time, and then returned to Dubai.
We both resemble each other.
Yeah.
Trying
did to you
analyze
not have a
that.
Photo on your blog?
I think I had an image of Garfield, maybe.
Yeah, and I don't think you had your name there either. And so a friend of mine who saw that looked at that and thought, oh, this is Chirag. Like, obviously, it's the exact same story.
And that's me thinking that I'm unique. That's fantastic. Yeah, so at that time when we were all hanging out, you know, food blogging was sort of, you felt like you were being a pioneer. A lot of places were throwing out free invites. We felt like we were, you know, all the jazz. After a point, and it was very quickly, I just started to be quite demotivated. I didn't want to write about the same stuff that everyone would write about. So we'd get invited to something and then the whole world is talking about exactly the same thing. I hadn't found these places. I was being invited there. They just didn't resonate with me. For me, the things that typically resonate with me are the ones that I personally find after hunting them down. And I realized that those were the things that would inspire me to come back and write a blog post. My writing started to become very focused on this idea of a journey before the meal. And it's something that I've always done when I lived in Philadelphia in New York. I just didn't realize that that would also inspire me from a writing angle. Somewhere around September of 2011, I reached this point where I was becoming really obsessed with this idea of wanting to take people from restaurant to restaurant. You know, not just this monologue that happens on the blog. I wanted to start having a dialogue with people about the places that I loved. And I remember having this conversation with my dad. I walked up to him. I was very, very serious. And I said, I feel really bad because I think about food 8 hours of the day and I probably shouldn't be getting paid. And he said, I think you should try a little bit harder, because I just joined his company. This was my dream, to always work with him. So it was like a very, very big thing. And I remember, I think it was that day or a couple of days down the line, on the drive back home, I was talking to Shaban, who is now my husband. I just mentioned this, you know, I was like, if I could do whatever I wanted in the world, I would just leave everything and I would take people to the restaurants I love. And he's like, well, why don't you? I'll drive the bus. And so over the next 45 minutes between Alkoz and Alriga, we essentially spoke about why this idea was possible with him in, you know, driving the bus from restaurant to restaurant. And by then the seed was planted. I was just constantly thinking, I was obsessing over this idea. Within a couple of months, Farida had just got married. Everybody at home was really happy. And I was like, let me just try throwing this bombshell back out again and see what the reaction was. And the second time around, which was in Feb of 2012, it was super positive. My parents were, you know, now they realized, okay, I had thought about it. They were extremely, as they always are, very supportive. And that's when I thought, okay, I'm going to start my own food tourism company. And how hard can that be?
Farida, when you were listening to this as someone who was being brainstormed with as an idea, what was your take on it at that time?
So, you know, actually, Arva and I never brainstormed about this. I knew she was food blogging, but I was caught up in a lot of wedding prep madness. So I had no idea that Arva wanted to start her own food tourism company and get out of food blogging. So when she finally told me this, it was actually really a surprise. But I love that I've been such an unwitting part of this journey. It took my getting married for my dad to get sentimental and say, oh, let, you know, my daughters live their dream. And then again, Arva went through a really tough time. In the lead up to getting the license was excruciatingly difficult for her. And I had ringside seats. So she kept me in the loop about all the challenges that she was going through, everything from someone running away with office rent money never to be seen again, to having to jump through these immense hoops just to get formalities out of the way. For me, things got real, I think, December 2012. Arva, I remember, called me one morning. As everyone who knows me knows, I'm quite a late riser, unlike Arva, and you know, she caught me off guard. I was waking up. She was absolutely distressed. So I asked her, I'm like, you know, calm down, what's happened? And she said, you know, I've jumped through every hoop possible, but I finally come across a challenge that I cannot overcome, and I will not be able to get my license. And I said, okay, you know, what's the problem? She says, now they tell me that to get a tourism license to do this, I either need to have some tourism experience or have done a course in tourism or have somebody on the team. And up until this point of time, this was Arva's solo dream. This was something she was going to do all by herself. This is news to me about Shaban being a bus driver, but I'm glad she had that. So in my sleep, I told her, I'm like, you know, why are you worried? I said, I have a tourism certificate. If you've heard Arva speak, it's not often that my sister is rendered speechless. And I had that opportunity with her. She was speechless. And after a few seconds of silence, she said, what, say that again? I said, yes, you know, I did hospitality in Switzerland and I decided to also get a certificate in tourism. And she said, oh my God, this is incredible. Let me call you back. And then again, she calls me back and she says, Farida, you know, if you don't mind, if it's okay with you, you won't have to do anything at all. You will just be...
Famous last words.
A name on the paper. Can I just list you as a general manager? Because then I will be able to go ahead with Frying Pan Adventures. And I said, yeah, of course. You know, it's not a problem. And no complaints. You know, from name on the paper, then Arva went on to saying, you know, Farida, if you don't mind, can you... I will do all the tours. Can you handle the back end? You know, the emails that come in.
Just the emails.
The media inquiries, etc. I said, okay, Arva, no problem at all. A couple of months later, and after Arva had suffered from laryngitis, I think twice, why don't you start?
No, that's not what happened. What happened was, I knew I wanted Farida to be doing tours because I didn't trust anyone else, right? And she knows her stuff. But I couldn't ask her that because now that's pushing it too far. And I want people who are really passionate. Yeah. I want them to be like, I want to do the tour. So I had to bring Farida to that point, which she didn't know she could be there, but that was the point. So I told Farida, I said, can we just start looking for people? Mm-hmm. Looking for people, right? It was this anonymous people that we would look for who would come and be food tour guides. And we went through a summer of some really painful interviews, which I wanted Farida to go through this because I remember after one particularly painful interview, a candidate walked out and Farida was like, oh my God, I'm so done with this. Like, I should just do the tours. And I'm thinking, bingo.
Yeah, wow, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you call inception.
Yeah, this is quite an elaborate ploy to get Farida to start doing the tours. Because what I'm hearing right now is, Farida, like, over 5 years, everything has changed except your title.
Essentially.
Everything.
Yeah, that's a good summary.
And actually, my complete title, because Arva was very smart right at the beginning, and I have to commend her on this. Initially itself, on the license as general manager, but Arva has always tutored me as general manager and special events lead.
Because that is just open.
I mean, first year itself, right, when we had no clue that we would ever be getting into special events. So she covered ground right there. So whenever the first inquiry for a special event came up, Arva was like, oh, guess what? That's in your special event as well.
I mean, anyway, the general manager is exactly that. Yeah. General.
I need to revisit this job title. Leave it as general manager on visa and for all purposes on the license, but get something a little bit more specific. So this organic kind of inception ruse doesn't keep happening.
One of the things that she mentioned as well is, you know, you guys were essentially the first, you were a category that did not exist when it came to getting registered.
In Dubai.
What was that like? I mean, coming across that kind of barrier, how did that play out? How did you get that turned around?
You know, there was a general lack of knowledge out there, which was incredibly frustrating. And honestly, the whole process could have been so much faster. It's just that because we didn't know, we just kept going back over and over again and being sent back every time for something additional because we didn't fully understand these requirements. You see, the requirements, the legislation is actually written for big tourism companies. And there are requirements like you need a manager with 3 years tourism experience. That's essentially throwing out newcomers, new ideas. All of these things are just, they're big hurdles. They're not explained. There's no easy way. I think now it's different. Everything is different. The whole process of getting your license, people there are easier to sort of speak to. At the time, I was hunting around on the internet, trying to call. I would be one of the few women who would walk into the DTCM legislation office. And it was just this process. You know, I didn't even know that I needed to start a company. I thought I just needed to be a tour guide because it was just a solo thing. I'd get my tour guide license and everyone that I spoke to said, yeah, you can get a tour guide license. You can do tours. It was only a 2-week licensing process. Get the license and then a list of fines. And one of the fines is basically that if you do tours independently without a company backing you, then you have a big bill to pay at the end of the month. Right. And I was thinking, wait, how did no one say this the whole time? So there were lots of these issues of like back and forth. I stopped talking about food tourism as an idea. I would just say, I want to start a tour company. Because otherwise people would say, what? Restaurant? This ridiculousness around new ideas. And I honestly found it incredibly, incredibly frustrating.
Okay, so let's move to the next frustrating thing that comes after that, because this is something that any entrepreneur has to deal with, right? Finding your customers. You're trying to find customers in a category that does not exist. You guys got around all of these different hurdles. January 2013, we're here, you've started it. How do you get people convinced to do this next?
So let me say this, that we actually had things play out very differently. We had customers even before we launched. We were very lucky. Through 2012, when I had first had that naive idea, I thought I will launch next month. I was very public on social media, very small group of followers, but I was still very public that I'm going to launch. And then, oh, oops, I'm not because this happened. So next. Okay. And then next. And I didn't realize it was not something that I sat there and consciously made this media strategy. But essentially what was happening was people were going on this journey and becoming really invested in this idea that we will start a food tourism company. Mm-hmm. So you see, the word started to spread even before we opened. And I remember in December, there was a food blogger. Her name is Lara Dunstan. And I thought, there's just a food blogger, you know, and on Twitter, and she has all these questions and she has this deadline. And I'm like, whoa, I food blog as well. Like, I've never taken my work so seriously. And she's like, you need to answer these questions before this time. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. I'm going to get you the answers. It was about the tourism company. And then, you know, New Year's, and we still don't have a license and things are still dragging out. Jan 2nd, actually, I remember Jan 2nd in the morning, I start getting an emails from London. hey, we'd like to book a tour. Where do we book? And I was like, what? I've not marketed. I've not done anything. I don't even have license. So I remember responding to one of the first of those emails saying, how do you know about this business? And the lady responded back saying, oh, you don't know. You've just been mentioned in the Telegraph. It blew my mind away. So Lara Dunstan had written this article on 36 hours to spend in Dubai. And she had inserted us at 12 p.m., which is not really where we would do a food tour. But it doesn't matter. She had put us there. And actually, that kept us busy for the first 3 months. It continued. And to date, I'll have people listing the Telegraph as their source of information.
Yeah, but I'm also going to add over here, I think Arva's stint in the food blogosphere really, really helped. So the food bloggers, as you know, are a pretty tight-knit community. And we had been active in Twitter festivals that were back, really huge back in the day. There were Bake Fest, etc. And the community has really stood by us. We have some long-standing friends like yourself. People like Sally Prosser deserves a special mention. So already they were following Arva's journey. And as soon as she launched the tours, not only did they come, but anytime they had family or friends visiting, they would book. So anytime they had a special occasion. I mean, I think one of the first special events we did was Sally's birthday tour.
Yeah. And Sarah Walton has come back, Mina, like all, there's just too many names to mention. Yes. But if anyone's listening, hey,
all
thanks
hardcore,
to everybody.
Yeah. All hardcore loyalists.
Let's come to today now. We're in 2018. You guys are at 5 years, right? That's quite a huge deal as well. So talk to us about where you guys are today.
So last when I checked, we've done over 850 tours and we've served close to around 7,300 guests on some of our standalone experiences. We also do a lot of partner experiences. And honestly, when you look at those numbers, they're really, really tiny in a market that deals with mass market experiences. Someone would finish that kind of number in what, 2 months, maybe less, you know. So
or even compared to desert safaris, right?
Exactly.
I will say this, at least for the first two and a half years, it was just Arva and I doing the tours. And now we have Stephanie and Nahla and Tanya as well. So when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, we are a bit of a niche company, not because we plan on being so, but given that we're only a very small team of trail hosts versus, you know, DMCs like having a huge, huge number on their staff, I would say 7,000 is not too bad.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, I mean, this is also because we are limiting our capacity. We don't want large groups. We don't want too many tours running in a day. We really want it to feel organic and not touristy in any way. One of the early journalists who wrote about us said something that really resonated with me. I've never forgotten it. And that's kind of a guiding principle for me, which is that frying pans tourists hate other tourists.
Stay with us when we come back, how Frying Pan goes about hiring their tour guides and why they started a podcast.
Do you struggle to speak up? Maybe it's an irritating habit you wish a coworker would stop, a boss who's micromanaging you, or a direct report who isn't performing as well as they should be. Whatever the situation, many of us put up rather than speak up. Why? Because it's hard. My name is Dawn Metcalf and I wrote the Hard Talk Handbook to make it easier. Find out more at hardtalk.info.
Support for the show comes from Declutter Me, a branded podcast in partnership with Amaya FM, talking about organizing and decluttering your life with your host, Shalina Jokir.
Hi, Shirag.
So what's been your favorite episode?
My favorite episode has to be the Swedish death cleaning episode.
Yeah, not a lot of people may know what Swedish death cleaning is, though.
No, they won't, and they'll have to listen to the podcast to find out more. But yeah, interesting topic and very relevant for families and friends.
You can listen to Declutter Me in your favorite podcast player. You can listen to it in the same one you're listening to this ad right now, as well as in streaming apps like Spotify and Angami. For more information, visit declutterme.com/podcast. Yeah, we've had the fun story where there was a hiring process that was done purely to get Farida on board. Fair enough. Because what your passion is for food, and sure, there are tons of people that have passion for food, but actually taking someone through a cultural journey about it, and being able to deliver that experience in that way, right? And so it's one thing for Arva to take her passion, make it into a company, and then do a tour. Although still tough, but at least within the scope to say, okay, I'm going to drag my sister into this because she's seen that passion in me and she can communicate that. But then how do you take that to... Today you guys have other tour guides as well. Like, how do you go about that?
We're control freaks and we do have trust issues because this is very, very close to our hearts. So hiring was not easy. We do get in quite a few applications through our website or even people who've actually been on our tours. We really, really vet every candidate out. We do a couple of rounds of interviews as well. We have very special interviews. So anyone applying to be a trail host actually has to take us out for a meal and walk us through the meal. And that's what happened with Stephanie, Nahla, and Tanya. They resonated with our vision. They understood what we are about, and their passion for food and the stories that surround that food runs as deep as ours does.
What was a game changer for us was an idea suggested by Mohammed Somji, who runs Gulf Photo Plus, co-runs Gulf Photo Plus. He said, Arva, why don't you have a questionnaire on your website? And at the time, I just sort of poo-pooed over the idea. I'm like, another thing that I have to create, another one of those ideas that people come up with. How do they know my business? I actually went back, created the questionnaire. And the questionnaire is quite nuanced in the sense it targets exactly the things I would want to know. So right off the bat, someone who goes through the process of answering those questions is already self-selecting because they're invested in getting to the end of that questionnaire. But also it helps us really suss out candidates pretty quickly. And I've really found the caliber of people who apply have become very, very strong over time. It's become people who really understand our business. Both, for example, Tanya and Nahla came to us after they had done our tours already. Also, word of mouth is spreading. And then, as Farida said, we have a pretty strict first round process, which is I have 3 hours in Dubai, only 3 hours. I've never been here. Pick the one restaurant alone in any part of the country that you will take me to. Right. You're going to order the dishes. We'll handle the bill, but you need to know everything about everything at that restaurant. And then we'll also pick a random place about a week before that visit. Let's say Uzbekistan. Talk to me about the food of Uzbekistan. When we meet at the restaurant, you're going to have to be an expert on Uzbekistan. I want to see where you're going to go for research. And we've been pretty blown away, actually, by... I remember when Nahla, I had given her Morocco. She not only found the neighborhood, which I thought was totally hidden. That was my little Moroccan food neighborhood. She actually created a little box of goodies. This. She cooked couscous and all of this. I'm like, you realize that I can't even accept this on the interview. And I looked at this box. I'm like, that's fantastic. That box. Like, where did you buy that box from? It's so beautiful. And she said, I made it.
And that's how Nahla got the job. She bribed us.
She didn't, honestly. But I had the food because I didn't want it to go to waste. But it was fantastic. I mean, the level of effort and investment that went into it was really incredible.
This is something that you can't entirely teach as well, right? Like, some of it has to... I mean, you can refine it for them. You can take it from 80 to 90% maybe, but you can't deal with someone who's at 50%.
Exactly. You cannot make out whether you want to hang out with someone for 4 hours eating with them over a conference table. It's got to be at a restaurant. It's got to be over food because that's how our guests will meet them. So we may as well see them in that situation.
What is the one thing, if you have to pinpoint in the last 5 years, that you are like absolutely proudest of? I mean, I know creating Fried Pad Adventures, of course, but I'm saying within that, like the one thing that you feel like, I'm so glad I did this part or this one particular thing that made, a world of difference.
So for my part, I am the most proud of the fact that Arva and I, we don't fight running a company. And anyone who knows us as siblings in our personal lives will know how we are. It's not easy working in a family business, and it's especially not easy for two siblings to work together. I mean, you would expect ego clashes or things like that, but thanks to our parents who keep us real, of course, and touch wood.
And we worked on that. You know, it doesn't just come that easy. Like, of course, your siblings, of course, you're going to have...
We don't always see eye to eye.
But we've had pretty explicit conversations, I think, about it, which has been... so that's me. How do I top that now? Now if I like go and say something like, I'm really
wiser.
Happy that we started this tour, you know, that's going to sound really
I'm
material.
I'm the wiser sister.
Okay, I'll tell you. So I am really proud about the fact that we have built some incredible relationships with people on the street without... I feel like this is going to come and bite me at some point, but I'm going to say it and hope that it doesn't jinx me. Without having written contracts. You know, sort of in some cases, not even explain to a vendor what we're about to do because we just didn't even know how to explain to them. There's some restaurants where it's their culture to serve a lot of food and you're suddenly not, you're getting tasting portions of things. And these are restaurants that have just become a part of our extended family. I'll give you an example. In one case, we are allowed special access to see how kunafa is being made. I had a group, I had shown them all of this and, you know, went back home. Next week I come back and the guy who's making the kunafa tells me that, you know, one of the people on your last group was a tour guide and she came back with a group of people and she wanted the same access. And I said, no, that's only for Arva. And I'm looking at him like, you just turned away business. You could have maybe started a whole set of competing relationships. You didn't need my permission. And there was so much respect. Like, there was so much. I've had someone, one of our other restaurants, call me up and say, you know, this TV team contacted me. Should I do it? I'm like, of course you should do it. He's like, no, but it's not coming with you. Usually I'm the one who brings them, like, media or whatever. And I said, no, just do it. It's going to help your restaurant. But I was just so touched. And there are so many instances of that. So for me, something happens, like, let's say, for whatever reason, rent is too high, something has to shut, or a person has to leave. Like, I actually feel deep pain, because these are not just servers or cooks or whatever. They are part of our extended family. These are people who are serving us the food that we so love and respect.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are talking about that, and I'm thinking to myself, like, sometimes you don't even get that kind of relationship when you have an agreement in place, right? Because there are so many times when people happily violate agreements, even though you've sat there and signed stuff with them.
Right? Yeah, so, like, one of the examples is one of the guys, I remember I landed up at the tour, my wallet was empty. I hadn't put in the petty cash that day, and I was like, Abu Ahmad, I don't have money. This sucks. Like, this is so embarrassing. And he's like, relax, relax. I'm like, no, it's not okay. It's not okay. Like, what am I going to do? And I have a whole tour. And he's like, just relax. You can pay me next time. It's okay. And then he proceeds to open up the cash register. And he's like, how much money do you need for the rest of the tour? I was just blown away. I was like, what? And he was ready to just give me a loan that day for whatever I needed.
So we were just talking about, like, the restaurants, right, which is more, if I can separate them out, as being your internal partnerships, right? Frying Pans, internal tours, internal partnerships. Talk to us about a little bit about now the external ones as well, right? You guys have been doing brilliant work with companies like Gulf Florida Plus, Royal Shaheen, and stuff like that, right? So tell us a little bit more about, like, what is it you guys seek out when you try to do these things, and then what are you actually building with them?
So I think Gulf Photo Plus was one of the first community partners that we signed up with. And what we do with them is unseen walks. So these are all about showcasing unseen parts of Dubai, and they are essentially photography and food trails. After that, I think we partnered with Royal Shaheen, who are experts in everything bird of prey, and we run a very unique offbeat desert safari experience with them in a part of the desert that very few companies have permission to venture into. So we're really, really lucky to have these partners on board. And I think one of the first things we look for when we're partnering with people is like-mindedness. I mean, you obviously want a partner who understands what you're doing and can work with you into building what you want to offer to your guests. So in our case, we want to offer really unique experiences. I know that word is bandied about a lot, but we try to stay true to it as much as possible.
We look at how they think about customers. For us, it's very important because they are an extension of our family, of our team. Their thought process around how to treat a guest and how to approach customer service is so critical, because we want the customer to go back thinking this was a memorable experience of a lifetime. Like, that's actually the goal that we aspire to. And I feel there's a lot of like-mindedness on that with the people that we've already worked with.
How do you ensure the quality of the tour and the experience, right? I'm sure, of course, you're working closely with the partners and stuff, but you guys have sort of the Frying Pan brand of experiences that you guys are delivering, right?
It's, in some cases, we are physically present on the experience. So with Unseen Trails, we have physically been there and we will always physically be there. With Royal Shaheen, for example, we went through a process where we would join them on the experience. We all kind of figured out how the other likes to work. And then at some point, we know that we can kind of just hand off because we've seen how they function. Customer feedback is the best thing to go with. We are so particular about sending people emails after they've done the experience. And we also, to the extent possible, we try to customize these emails. So for all those 7,000 plus guests that we've sent emails to, there's usually a couple lines in there which is actually targeted to them. It's something we discussed. It's something we heard about from the partner. You've got to watch customer feedback. They have been critical in our R&D process.
Let's talk now about the Frying Pan Diaries a little bit, right? Obviously, it's awesome that you guys are now Dubai's first food podcast, perhaps the only one, I think, anyway. But why? What made you think of doing a podcast?
Because you were doing a podcast.
Really?
Don't totally kidding. Totally, no, just. Well, I think Mohammed Somchi gets credit for this one as well, because he had sent me this podcast called The Splendid Table. I remember listening to this and saying, oh, that's interesting. And then I started getting addicted to it. And then I was completely addicted to it. And I suddenly realized, wow, this is a whole incredible world. Up until that point, I always thought that video was the only medium. And I found video challenging. A lot of people have told us, why don't you start a YouTube channel? Why don't you start a show? We've tried. I just find it really difficult because in terms of finding the people, in terms of the budget, even if you do something really simple, DIY style, you can't be behind the camera and holding the camera. And I don't mean a selfie stick. I was listening to these podcasts and I'm thinking, they're so rich in information. No visuals as a distraction. I don't need an audio manager. We can record, we can edit, we can do everything. We are not dependent on anybody. But also, we thought that right now, podcasts have been around for a long time, but they're trending again now. And whatever trends in the US and UK will trend here within 2 to 3 years' time. And so we thought, you know, if this is the format we want to go, we want to move towards it fast, because podcasting here is like what blogging was back in 2010. You don't get on it now, you will just be part of the clutter later on, you know? And that's why we decided we're going to start.
So I'm going to quickly jump in over here. I know Ira kept saying we thought we had...
Well, you're a general manager. So.
Again, what Ira means to say is that the idea was implanted in her head by Mohammed Somchi, and she was already miles ahead in the thought process. And then one day the call comes in. Farida, I want to start a podcast.
It usually, yes. That's...
You guys covered Grubshack, I think, in one of the earliest episodes. Right? And Grubshack is, although a restaurant eat very limited stuff at now. But I remember them in Sharjah, right, when they had opened, and I mean, loved the place. So when you guys did that, and you guys captured like the sounds in the kitchen, right, and I remember listening to that and thinking, yeah, damn, I feel like I'm standing in their kitchen right now, because you hear the clicking on the tava.
Oh, this is the lethal stuff.
Yeah, so this is the main thing when you put in your green chili.
Making sure that sort of resonates down the road, right? That of course it's work. It's not. It sounds great because it's like, oh wow, they just went there and put a mic in the kitchen. Like it's not that simple, obviously, no. Right?
Again, all credit to Arva. She put in a lot of research over the last year, especially during the summer. She taught herself everything about podcasting, A to Z. You know, I come back from a trip to India and Arva is now a sound editing wizard. And
thanks to Simon. I'm going to give a shout out to Simon.
She's talking this language and throwing these words at me that initially I had no idea. We're talking at one-way mic, two-way mic, and she started saying pop filter. Now, I'm the older sister and I was too lazy to look it up. I didn't want to ask her. But for the longest time, I thought she was talking about a new filter, photo filter on Instagram. you know, pop filter. And I was like, you know what? She only wants my voice. So I don't have to bother with these technicalities. She's doing all the editing, going into the restaurants, all of that work. I don't have to learn. And again, in Arva style, thanks to her, now she's taught me as well how to edit.
I think we're still playing around with format. We're still also playing around with recording techniques. There's been a lot of crash and burn. So example, the Grubshack one is fantastic because I remember they had one crab left that day, right? And so we went into the kitchen, super excited. And I've got at that time I had only one lapel mic and I had this field recorder. And we started recording, threw in the crabs, like amazing. I'm just thinking, oh my God, this whole episode is going to be so fantastic. It's going to be so fantastic. And then I was like, oh, I didn't turn the recorder on. And, you know, like crab is cooked, it's cooked. I mean, you can't go back. You just have to leave out the audio or you have to use an audio from another bit and chop it in there. And, you know, so it's a lot of that where you have to, now we know. First you do the interview, then you might have to do the dish 2 or 3 times to get exactly the sounds and then layer it in. So it's been a process of learning.
So what is one thing today, right, that you wish you knew back then, 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever, that you had to learn the hard way?
I don't know if I, for my part of the journey, would have redone anything at all, because it's been quite a ride. I would do it all over again with all the ups and downs, because everything that I have learned is something that I would never have dreamed up and I would never give it up. So no, I wouldn't change a thing. But maybe Arva would.
I think mine is a little bit more personal. It's something that I've been grappling with every year, but I feel this year I'm really just taking it on, is this idea of space outside of frying pan and all the things that we want to do. It's very difficult when something is your baby to actually turn your brain off. Having a team now in place that's larger is giving us the luxury of being able to do that. So maybe the learning would be that I wish we had just focused on building out a stronger team earlier, because we are at a stage where 5 years in, we've accomplished so much. But at the same time, I just feel that had we had a team in place, so much more of it would be even more sustainable. The returns would be better for all of the work that we're putting in. Having a good, solid team just makes things better. And I'm very much the kind of person who tries to take on as much as possible. I think you know that, Chirag. Like, yeah. When we first started, I was like, I'm going to build my own website, but I'll also build the booking system. I'll code the booking system.
Which you did.
But the point is that that's not the right answer. There's, you know, you will keep coming up against a wall and like falling down after a point because you're just fatigued. Yeah. And there's someone who can do it better, you know, and I think I get this from my dad. Let's create it from the start. And I don't think that's always necessary.
What would be Frying Pan's next challenge now?
The next step for us is corporates and residents. That's our big focus now. We have not had the capacity as a team to be able to focus on anything other than essentially what is walk-in traffic. And now we finally have a team that can sit there and craft experiences. We want to be able to do something that is targeted to companies, especially new employees who are joining. We want to give them a better taste, a more well-rounded taste of the city, but also our residents. Our residents have been so supportive. So many of our tours have residents on them. And people always find that surprising. I don't know what the ratio is. Maybe 20% residents, 30% residents.
I think when we began, it was mostly tourists because residents don't really check TripAdvisor. And the few residents we got was because they had people visiting and bringing them in. But now, yeah, I think it's an even toss-up between the two.
Like, I think on Farida's, like on the Indian tours, it's primarily residents.
In fact, special shout-out to Jenny Blankspie. She's done
Jenny!
Yeah, she's done the Little India tour 5 times ever since we started.
She's amazing.
Including twice last year. It's amazing. We have such amazing guests. There are so many residents like that. So big thank you. But yes, we are currently working on a resident club program because a lot of residents have reached out to us with the same question. What next? They've done all our tours. Some of them many times and they still will. But they want us to start doing something new.
The journey of Frying Pan Adventures reminds us that from small beginnings come great things. Building a business that ties your passions, the city you live in, the people you grew up with, and your sense of identity is more than just personal. It becomes the definition of purpose. Thanks for listening, and if you've enjoyed this episode, do tell your friends and leave us a review. It really supports us. You can find the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen, and you can also follow us for more updates on Instagram. We'll see you soon.